Okay, guys, this probably was not the ideal time for us to start a chronological study because of summertime and everybody is all over the place. And for you guys not from Utah, it's like Utah, you've noticed, I mean, in the summertime, it's just crazy. I mean, people just are, every other house has a camper trailer, right? And it's and four-wheelers, and it's like everybody's gone and scattered. So it was probably not the best time to start a study that one builds upon the other, but that happened. So and then Ken's gone, so I'll continue to fill in for him while he's away. But we will just carry on and try to fill you in on what happened last week and try to fill in the gaps, because one really does build upon the other here in this chronological study. So I won't put much pressure on you, but we'll go over these questions. And as a review from last week, you remember, as we talked about last time, that, you know, obviously God created this perfect environment. After the 7 days, everything was just as he intended it to be. Everything was perfect. Adam and Eve were placed in the Garden of Eden. God had brought Eve to Adam. We talked about this element of unity, this amazing thing of how this physical illustration, even of God taking out of the man flesh and bone and fashioning the woman, and something's missing from the man, and he brings the two back together, and it's just like this, it's just this kind of this moment you pick up on this if you read with open eyes through Genesis chapter 2. It's this moment of, whoa, God really did something way beyond, something phenomenal here, when he brought the man and the woman together in this unity and this oneness that illustrates something about himself, but is also for the benefit of human beings. And so, it was his idea, this thing of marriage and the family, and that was his plan. It was not an accident. It was from the very beginning, the design was for that. And then, so you have man and the woman in perfect unity with one another, no baggage, just this communication, this union together, physical and spiritual, and each of them with equal access to God, this oneness with God, and this fellowship and intimacy with God that was just the most fulfilling thing that you could even imagine. This relationship, not just between the man and the woman, between the man and God, and between the woman and God. And he says that the implication, he would take on some form, possibly of a man, and walk with them in the cool of the day in the garden. And there was just like this, they had purpose, they had work, not the kind of work that we have necessarily of trying to just eking out a living by the sweat of your brow and this difficulty, but they had work, and they had purpose, and they had relationship, and they had this God filling, this God-shaped vacuum, and life was perfect. The environment was perfect. The temperature was perfect. The food was perfect. Everything was. And there was this requirement that God had made of them, that you're not to eat from this one tree. If you do, you will surely die. So tell me, what is the punishment for going your own way apart from God? Death. It's a hard word, you know? It's a hard thing. Death. And so we went into detail about that. Why? Why is that? Why should just eating a fruit, why should you die for eating some fruit? That's ridiculous. That's not fair, God. Well, we worked through that process. So hopefully we came to an understanding there. And whether you understand all that or not, still the fact remains, it's clear. God, you go your own way apart from God, you have that choice. You can make that choice, and we all have. And the punishment is death. What kinds of death are there? What kind of death is it? Physical death. Didn't happen immediately, did it? But it did happen. It eventually happened because they were removed from their source of life. They did die physically. What else? What was the other death? Spiritual death. The death of a relationship. Bam. It happened immediately when they sinned against God, they parted the relationship. There was a separation there between God and man. And we see the rest of the Bible, really, you see this trying to bridge in this gap, understanding how can we reconcile this relationship. And what's the third death? What? Eternal. Forever separated from God. And so, God then began to make this reveal this way. God was not backed into a corner. He is absolutely and perfectly just, so it demands. His own law demands that he follow through on what the punishment for sin is. He's just. He is a just, righteous judge. And if he said, oh, it was just fruit, don't worry about that, we're still pals, he would not then be a righteous and just God. But he was not to be backed in a corner by his own character or by his own law. He is going to make a way for man to come to him. And remember, the first kind of eye-opening experience of that was that they recognized that their nakedness, they recognized that they had shame and guilt. And so God killed an animal. Blood was shed. It was ugly, uncomfortable, horrible thing. This was not something they were used to, not something that was planned. Well, God knew about it. We won't get into all that. But an animal had to die. Blood had to be shed and a covering made for them. And then we come to Cain and Abel, born outside the garden, born separated from God, born with this nature, this tendency to rebel against and go their own way apart from God. And we talked about that. We gave the example of the two-year-old. You leave the two-year-old in the room and you say, hey, don't step up on this stage here. Don't come up here. And I'll be back in just a minute. When you come back in the room, where are they going to be? Right up here. They're going to cross that line. You thought they're going to go out in the street. That's that Adam nature, that rebellious nature, sin nature, to lift ourselves to do what we want to do apart from God. And they were born with that, and they followed through on that. They had sinned. And so God had made a way for them to come back to him, that they would sacrifice an animal, something that was horrendous, that was not used to this thing of animals dying or anything dying. And you remember how Cain came to God. You know, Cain was a farmer. He grew crops and fruit, and he brought this gift. He had worked hard for this, and he brought this to God. Here's my offering, God. Here's my sacrifice. And God rejected it. God rejected it. He did not accept Cain's offering. No matter how hard he worked for it, no matter how, if it was the very best that he had to offer, he did not accept it. That is the first incident, and we're going to have another incident today. And that's the first incident of religion. Do you see that? That is man trying to make his way to God. God has one way to come to himself. Abel came in the way God said. God said, you bring an animal, blood, bring an animal. It must be a sacrifice, death, as a symbolic and as a substitute for you. So Abel comes with a lamb. Cuts its throat. It's ugly. It's not pretty. Cuts its throat. The lamb, innocent, harmless lamb, bleeds out and dies. And Abel puts his hand on his head as they did, and as an act of, this should be me. This is my substitute. This should be me, O God. I have sinned against you. Take the death of this lamb in place of me. A substitute for me. God accepted Abel's offering, and he accepted Abel, and they had a relationship. Cain? No. And that's a difficult thing to understand if you don't get who God is and what his standard is. Religion is a slap in the face to God. A man trying to be good enough or do enough on his own strength to make himself acceptable to God, making his own way to God. God disdains religion. In that sense, that type of religion. So man, if you follow on your outline, on the question one here, man chose to follow Satan rather than God. They chose to do what they wanted and to go their own way. And taking this action, they became a slave to Satan, sin, and death. So, remember that when the curse, and he told the serpent that the seed of the woman will crush your head. You will strike his heel, but he will crush your head. That means that authority will be taken from you. So there is a deliverance coming. There's a deliverer coming from the seed of the woman. A deliverer comes and will deliver you from the slavery, the control of Satan, the control of sin. The control of sin, that's not sins plural. That's sin singular. That's referring to the sin nature, the Adam nature that you inherited. There is a deliverance coming from that controlling you, and there's a deliverance from eternal death. There's eternal peace and joy and fellowship with God. So, do y'all know where that first promise of the deliverer? Genesis 3:15. And, we've already answered this, but what do we inherit from Adam? The sin nature. So, just as God established physical laws to govern the universe, so there are blank, blank, to establish the relationship between God and man. Well, you are just honored. What? Spiritual laws, yep. So, you break the law of gravity, there are some consequences, you know, that are going to come. You break spiritual laws, there are some consequences. They're just as real. So, according to the Bible, man's sin debt can be paid only in one way. Now, look through those. Look through those. Some of those things sound pretty good. How can the sin debt be paid? Death. Whew. That's tough. That's a tough word. Not hard work, huh? Not good deeds. So we'll get into that some more. So number three, God created man and loves him, but God is also just and demands death for the penalty of. And what is the significance about the clothes that God provided for Adam and Eve? There was a death. Have y'all ever noticed that before? If you haven't been to study through this, the clothes that God provided required a death. The covering for them required a death. So let's try to move on here to a lot of today. So last week, I feel like there were some spiritual truths that are so foundational to us understanding God's relationship with us, the relationship we desire to have with God. If you don't understand those, we just laid the first brick, in a sense, of that relationship. But and later there's going to come more and more understanding. But if you don't get that first one, that spiritual truth that we talked about, death and being a slave to Satan, sin and death, and about the payment for sin is death, and about substitution, and those things we covered just in the very first two chapters of Genesis, then you really won't get anything that follows. And so there's some stuff that follows that's like the daily living of what do I do with this struggle with sin? Why do I do the things I don't want to do? And why do I keep coming back to this thing? And why does this anger or lust or all these things come popping back up into my life? I'm a believer now. Shouldn't those things be gone? How do I deal with that? Well, the answer to those questions, now I could just give you the answer right off the top of my head right now, but if we haven't laid a foundation to really understand those things, then the answer will not sink deeply. That's why we build this foundation. That's why we go through this. So those were elemental spiritual truths. Now today is a little bit more of an infrastructure. So it's information that is important to know, in a sense, historically, even you could say just the world around us. And we're going to build on that later, but so it's not as much quite as much along the lines of spiritual truth. Some of it is, but we'll. So here we have 10 generations have passed. We're in Genesis, Genesis chapter 5, starting chapter 6. About 10 generations have passed. We're about 1,600 years out from creation. Timeline is where we are here in Genesis chapter 6. The population of the world had dramatically increased. So you figure, we had this, remember we talked about this vapor, this protective covering, almost like a canopy around the earth, protecting from ultraviolet light, this even temperature, which there's so much evidence for that around the world, this even temperature around the world. There's this, you haven't had all these genetic mutations that take place. So there hasn't been this genetic issues We still have people living for a very long age. The health of people is really, really good. People are multiplying and people are living for a long time. And the population has greatly increased on the earth. But mankind has continued to go his own way in a dramatic fashion away from God. Now, in every generation, there were a few that still put their trust in God and still came to God in the way that he had prescribed. But the world had become a very, very wicked place. And things were, there's a lot of things that were different in the world then. The physical structure of the earth, the mountains, rivers, seas was different. The environment, the temperatures were different. It was a different place. And you have these people that are just going their own way. And Satan, you see, Satan is out. He is out to destroy the line of the deliverer. Remember, he got control of Cain. He had Cain kill Abel, but then Seth was born. So you have Satan continually trying to attack, and there's a couple of things you begin to see about the way Satan does things and the way he operates in the world. And what you're going to see is he tries to bring unity in a bad way, to bring everything together so he can control it and so he can get on top and in a sense be like God over this unity. That's what you hear, all this one world government. That's why we don't agree with that type, sort of thing. One world government and all those sorts of things, is that there's a scriptural reason we don't agree with that. And you can see Satan moving and trying to organize these things and trying to destroy the line of the deliverer. So let's go here to Genesis 6, 1 through 3. And there's some crazy things going on here. When human beings began to increase in number on the earth and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of humans were beautiful, and they married any of them they chose. Then the Lord said, "My spirit will not contend with humans forever, for they are mortal. Their days will be 120 years. Now that 120 years is not that their lifespan will be 120 years. It is that in 120 years there's going to be an event. I'm going to put a stop to all this. So here, in 120 years, God saying, it's a warning. In 120 years, get your act together, get back on track, or there's going to be something happen in 120 years. I'm going to take care of business, and you have this much time to do it. Now, there's another thing here that I can't just skip over. This, it's like kind of craziness here. Is this speaking of angels, fallen angels interacting with the human race? You know, this is one instance. We don't build a theology on one obscure verse. Now, some people do that, and you really get off track. If you take one verse and you try to, you say, "I understand that verse," and you're going to apply all sorts of meaning to it. Well, I can give you my opinion of this verse, and other people can give, but this is the only incident we have in the Bible where this sort of thing is mentioned. And so we do know that Satan is out to destroy man. He's out to destroy the coming of the deliverer. He is out to destroy the line of the deliverer. And he's out to take control. He's always trying to duplicate what God does. What God does is good. He tries to mirror that. If God created a sexual union between a man and a woman to take place within the bounds of marriage, and he blesses that with joy and with children and that, then Satan's going to offer that same thing in a different environment. But death is going to come from that. That harm is going to come from that, even though at first it seems good. And he does that in just about every other blessing of God. And so we don't know if some... And Satan, we know after the flood, that event we're talking about in 120 years, that's the flood. And after the flood, we know that Satan, that God put more boundaries upon Satan. He had less room to operate, and during these days maybe he had more freedom to operate, so maybe he could genetically alter the human race somehow. We don't really know the full meaning of these verses. A lot of people can guess, but I don't think anybody, because there's no way to cross-reference this, so we don't know if you can be sure it's Satan trying to destroy mankind. That's what's going on here. Take control and destroy. That's the bottom line of what's going on there in chapter 6. We don't know exactly how he's infiltrating or genetically functioning, but we know that all that was destroyed with the flood. We know because the line started over with Noah and with his family. And we'll get into that in a minute. So, culture developed around the world. Okay, so things are bad, but you go to any large city in the world, in the United States or around the world, and you can go to some places. I've been to some places, and there's some like really sinful and open out in the open, some bad things going on. It doesn't mean that no culture has developed. There's still technology and culture has developed. And so those things were developing around the world, even though people were rejecting God and following Satan with gusto. Let's go to verses 5 and then 11 and 12. We'll come back to the other verses in a minute. Genesis 6, 5. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. And then down to 11. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on the earth had corrupted their ways. So again, if you can think of, you've seen this in modern times, if you think of different places in the world where the pursuit of pleasure takes on radical proportions, and also think of genocide and what goes on. We've seen what's going on with genocide, anarchy. Think of the murder, the rape, the trying to do away with a whole people group. Those things that have happened. That's evil on steroids. I mean, it is just out there. And these are the kinds of things that were going on during this time period. Evil consumed them. Perversion and chaos reigned, and it was a violent, violent place on the earth. There again to say, that does not mean they did not have intelligence and culture, because some of the things that ancient man accomplished is simply, it's simply amazing. There's so much evidence around the world of the intelligence of ancient man. Ancient man was not some brute walking around. You go to the Aztec, the ruins, or you go to Egypt or places in Africa or even in the South Pacific Islands, that there the knowledge and the ability of people to build magnificent things is just simply amazing once you start studying that stuff. We'll get into some of that in a minute. So people had taken on this living for self to the extreme. And let's go here to, they were ignoring God, living completely, pursuing their own pleasure and desires with abandoned recklessness. Romans 1:20, let's go there. This kind of is a description of that sort of living, of what was going on. Romans 1:20-25. These are kind of some long passages, and it skips around a little bit. We don't need to cover every single verse. You'll get the general flavor. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people were without excuse. Let me just talk about this one second. You know, we don't find the gospel, we don't find the specific gospel of how man can be reconciled to God in nature. You don't find that in nature. You don't find that in the stars. But there's enough there to take one step. There's enough to look at creation. You look at the constellations. You look at the way that the planets revolve and the way they rotate and the seasons and how things are set up and this how specific and precise it all is and on an enormous scale. Somebody ought to say, even if they know nothing, that there is somebody out there that made all this that is phenomenal. And when they say that, they can go to the next step, and pretty soon they'll get to the gospel and they'll hear what it means to know God. But if you ignore God from the onset, God's saying there's no excuse. Okay, you can say, I never heard that name. I never heard. There's no excuse, he says, because I gave you all this for the first step, and you never took the first step. You never responded to what I gave you. So no man is so that people are without excuse, is what it's saying there. And then verse 21, for although they knew God, they neither glorified Him as God nor gave thanks to Him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like a mortal human being and birds and animals and reptiles. Therefore, God gave them over to their sinful desires and their hearts to sexual impurity and for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. And then down to verse 29, they have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They have no understanding, no fidelity, no love, no mercy. Although they know God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do those very things, but they also approve of those who practice them. So you get the picture. This is the condition of the world at this time. So back to Genesis. And God is not going to let it go on, because what's going to happen if He lets it go on is that man is going to wholesale everything. Every individual is going to be going that direction and it's all lost. And He's not going to let that happen. Man is going to be held accountable. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. This is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So one man and his family were different. He trusted God, and he came to God in the way that God had prescribed. You see, this is not saying that Noah was sinless. Don't get the wrong picture here. Noah was not sinless, because we know that Noah came to God. We have incidences where Noah came to God offering a blood sacrifice. What was he saying when he's offering the blood sacrifice? He's saying, God, I'm a sinner. Take this animal as a substitute for me. Forgive me. And God accepted Noah as if he was righteous. So that was the situation with Noah and his family. And then down to verses 13 and 14. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence. Because of them, I'm surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So make for yourself an ark of cypress wood, make rooms in it, and coat it with pitch, inside and out. So you see what's going on here. God is making a way of deliverance for them. He's going to deliver them from the coming flood. And He's telling Noah to build a boat. Now this is not the little crochet thing you see, the little boat and the little guy with the beard and the stick and his wife standing behind him, whatever her name was, we don't know, and Noah's wife, and the giraffe's head sticking through a hole in the roof. Well, this was not that kind of boat. This boat was a football field and a half long. It was 75 feet wide and 45 feet tall. It had three levels, and it had a complex ventilation system in it to air out the smell that would surely be there. And God had a plan here. And you can kind of read this over and laugh at it, or you can read carefully, and you can see that it makes sense. There was one door. One door. OSHA would not have approved of this. One door. One way in and one way out. Now, this was a ship. Okay? It's more similar to a modern freighter than to the pictures that we see. In fact, the ratios of this boat were almost duplicated. In 1844 was the first time a ship that approached this size was built. We're talking about, so this is, what do we say, 2300 B.C. was when this boat was built. The next time a boat was built that even came close to matching it in size and dimension was in 1844, and that was a ship the Great Britain that was built along similar dimensions. So the dimensions of the ark are still considered ideal for a large and stable boat. So you have to remember, this boat is built and designed not for speed to cut through the water. It's designed to rock and roll. And it's designed to right back. And you can see, if you pay attention to the design of this thing, it's more like a rectangle. And so it's riding in the water just right. So, and it has a cover over it so that it's rolling, and it can handle severe seas that it is going to experience. There's one way of escape that is going to be offered. Let's look at Genesis, 6:17-22. I'm going to bring the floodwaters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens and every creature that has breath of life in it. Everything on earth will perish, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, and you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. You are to bring into the ark two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, every kind of animal, and every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and stored away as food for you and for them. Noah did everything as God commanded him. And then chapter 7, verse 1, then the Lord said to Noah, go into the ark, you and your whole family, because I have found you righteous in this generation. And then 13-16, for that very day Noah and his sons Shem, Ham, and Japheth were together with his wife, and the wives of his three sons entered the ark. They had with them every wild animal according to its kind, all livestock according to their kinds, every creature that moves along the ground according to its kind, every bird according to its kind, everything with wings. Pairs of all creatures that had the breath of life in them came to Noah and entered the ark. The animals going in were male and female of every living thing, as God had commanded Noah. Then the Lord shut them in. So you don't necessarily need every what we would classify as every species, because if we classify a species, if we say a horse, a zebra, a donkey, well, in the Bible, those are one kind. Those are one kind. And you have all the genetic potential in the original version. You have all the genetic potential of those, because those animals can mate together. They can have offspring. They are of the, you could say, the horse kind. So you would have the dog kind. You wouldn't need Dalmatians and German Shepherds and Labradors. You wouldn't need Labradors, but you wouldn't need all those others. So you see what I'm saying? You need the kind, and all the others can, all the genetic potential in the kind for the various species that. We've talked about all that. We'll never get through if we go down that road again. So, where were we here? So, because Noah believed God, he obeyed him. It was not easy. It was 120 years that he had to build this boat. 120 years he had to preach to the people around him. And do you guys know that there is almost every culture, There's some common things among every culture that's ever been discovered. One of those common themes is religion. There's never a culture been discovered that doesn't have a religion. Is that interesting? That tells us a little something. But you know, I'm not saying every culture, but many cultures have a flood story. Don't know that. The Aborigines in Australia, they have a flood story. It sounds very, very similar to this. There's flood stories from all over the world that you can read in ancient literature. And now some of you start reading on them, you go, wow, this sounds like the Bible. And then it has some kind of bizarre, crazy things happening. And so people will sometimes say, well, look, the Bible is just like, has a myth, like the rest is all. And my answer to them is, no, this is the right story that was carefully written down and recorded and tracked all through history. All the others are word of mouth of things that have been, they're the copies, and this is the original. This is the right one, and all those others, and we have evidence, we won't get into all that, but there was a flood. There was a flood. And there is much geological evidence of that, and hopefully, I always run out of time on this lesson. hopefully we'll get to some of that today. So there was a way of escape. It took 7 days to load the ark. All the animals were brought, came to Noah. He didn't have to go out and hunt them down. About 60% of the space would have been used. Y'all know there's an ark exhibit by Answers in Genesis in Kentucky. There's a outside of Lexington. There was just completed. There is a life-size from dimensions from the Bible of an ark that has been completed. It has animals in it, and it is an awesome. If you have a chance, you should go. We've been to the Creation Museum there, but this is something new that's been in the last 5 to 10 years. They have built this. It's an awesome thing. And scientists, a lot of people have worked on this. It's a very accurate according to the scripture. So there was one door that was to safety. God shut the door. All those who believed were shut in. The rebellious were shut out. God is gracious. 120 years he gave them, but time had run out. Time was up. Verses 11 and 12 of chapter 7. In the 600th year of Noah's life, on the 17th day of the second month, on that day, all the springs of the deep burst forth, and the floodgates of the heavens were opened. And rain fell on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. So, that cute little cartoon boat would have been history in what happened next. There was a storm that was about to be unleashed on the earth that had never and has not been seen since and was never seen before. The springs of the great deep burst forth. The floodgates of heaven were open. So remember we talked about there was a different watering system for the earth before the flood? So there are these great caverns, and there's still some of those that are still there. There's that are filled with water and under pressure and under heat. And those things, it's like the crust of the earth was cracked. And all this stuff burst forth. Volcanoes went off. The floodwaters from that canopy we talked about came crashing down, and Earth's crust was ruptured. I mean, this thing was huge. Volcanic activity, possibly even continental drift during this time. A catastrophic deluge. Nothing else has ever come close. It says in Psalm 104, we won't go there right now for time, 104, it says that mountains rose up and valleys sank down. These awesome peaks that we see out here on the Wasatch, those things came during the flood. That's when the dramatic, okay, I know you've studied different things and you've heard different stories, but that's when it says in Psalms that it was during the flood that those peaks rose up and the valleys sank down. You see all these drainage systems, you look up here, you see all these drainage systems on these mountains. Did that happen from just rain coming down or snow? It's like the runoff from the flood caused most of the drainage systems that we have today. There was a great lake right here. There was Bonneville Lake that was right here. Where in the world did all these inland seas come from? They're all over the world. In the Sahara Desert, there is a place like one of those little sand dune hollows where they dug out and they found a pod of whales. Dead. Fossilized. How did whales get in the Sahara Desert? How'd they get trapped? Well, there were great inland seas. The water eventually ran off and things were trapped. You know, there's a song that Caleb, you know, when Caleb used to sing songs, there's a song that Caleb sang with Buddy Davis. If there really was a worldwide flood, what would the evidence be? Billions of dead things buried in rock layers laid down by water all over the earth. If there really was a worldwide flood, what would the evidence be? It's exactly what we find. You know, if a possum, not here, but in South Georgia, if a possum gets hit on the road and it dies, what happens to it? Well, it fossilizes, right? When was the last time you saw a fossil forming or heard of a fossil forming like an elk dies in the forest? Does it fossilize? A plant dies. Does it fossilize? If a dog dies, does it fossilize? Tell me something that fossilizes. How does that happen? Why do we have so many stinking fossils? We go to a certain layer. Scientists know this, and you can find fossils, billions of fossils, in sedimentary rock. What is sedimentary rock? Glenn, come on. What's sedimentary rock? Laid down by water. That's what sedimentary rock is. It's laid down by water. And the Grand Canyon took billions and billions of years to form. But tell me, when you look across the strata of the Grand Canyon, and there are fossils of trees that cross millions of years of strata. There's a fossil of a whale they call it the whale on the tail. It's a vertical whale, fossilized, with strata, 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 strata. Wouldn't the rest of him rot while it's taking time to build up over the millions of years? Laid down by water quickly. Catastrophic events are what form fossils. Concrete poured over the poor cat that didn't make it out. That would fossilize, wouldn't it? That's a catastrophic event. That wasn't even planned. So you have all this stuff. You know, if you had this great lake encircled by mountains formed in a place like this, and the debris had dammed up on one side, it may take 100, 200, 300 years. Pretty soon that dam's going to break. But if the whole earth was covered in water and the ground was soft, and that water left from an inland sea in a hurry. Have you ever seen water leaving someplace in a hurry, what it does? Go to Mount St. Helens and see the canyons that were carved almost instantaneously. I'll guarantee you, scientists, if people are still around 10 million, a million years from now, they're going to say that what happened at St. Helens took millions and millions of years. It did not. It happened very, very quickly over a short time span. The new canyons and all the stuff that's formed there and all the new rock. So if you had all the water from a great inland sea rush out and the ground was soft, a great canyon could be formed. A great canyon could be formed very, very quickly. There's evidence all over the world. Glenn, you ever been on one of these mountains? You ever found a shell up on one of these mountains up here? How many times have I found shells on the top of... I made it all the way up. A shell? What's that shell doing on the top of this mountain? Scientists, tell me. There was a great, great flood from the hand of God. And we can ignore all the evidence if we want to, or we can accept it. There was the promise. That God would punish sin. And the first thing that when Noah came out of the ark, the first thing that he did, you can read it for yourself, is that he offered a blood sacrifice. He killed the animals that were brought on for that purpose. I know it's late. This is not very spiritual. But can I share with y'all about ice ages before we go? Y'all ever wondered about ice ages? I've always wondered about this. I kind of like I've been studying this thing quite a while back. Is that a yes? Can I tell y'all about ice ages? Or do we need to? All right. So I hope I've given you this picture of this great upheaval. Volcanoes, they're spewing ash into the air. There's all this upheaval. The waters of the earth from all this volcanic activity. Scientists estimate the waters of the earth after an event like this could have been at 90 degrees. Okay, 90 degrees is not like steaming hot, but 90 degrees is warm. It's nice. It's warm. So waters all over the earth are warm from all this volcanic activity. You have all this ash in there. You have this immense amount of evaporation that's going to take place. And what happens when you have all this evaporation? You have all these particles in the air. You have this climate change now. This is for real climate change. We have this. We know this took place. What are you going to get? You're going to get snow. It's cold up there. You have all this warm water. You're going to get a lot of snow. And so a lot of scientists think that the ice age that we see, the evidence of the ice age in glaciers, that this happened within the 300 years after the flood. And that it was not this sort of thing global-wide. It was mostly northern or southern, the southern end and the more northern, and all higher elevations. And that the waters of the oceans would be much lower. So you're going to have land bridges that cross from Asia over to Alaska, and through down the Philippines, and down through all the islands. That you're going to have all these the seas are going to be much lower. You're going to have routes of migration that basically can go all over the earth. And I have the answer also for Hawaii and Australia, but we'll get that later. We'll talk about the Tower of Babel. We have to talk about it next week. It was a real thing, a real engineering marvel that happened there. And people were spread over the whole earth from that spot. And there were migration routes that were very, very possible to take from there. You have all these different language groups. Do you know from all the languages, studies of linguistics, that people can find no connection between some languages? You know, some languages, English, German, Spanish, there's some connections there. But there's some languages that have no relationship to one another. None. You cannot find it. Linguistics cannot find the relationship. They did not come, in a sense, like they try to make everything evolutionary, come from a common source. There was no common source for language. There was one language, and then God confused the languages and made many languages. And then they branched off over time and made other languages. And the people spread from there over the entire earth. So people are migrating, some slowly, some quickly. And I've heard studies that talk about how long it does not take as long as you would think to go from Mesopotamia all the way up across Asia and down into the Americas. And there are migration routes that we think that they took to get to these places. And there were passages. It was not all completely ice covered. But during that ice age, that 300 years, that there were land bridges between the ice. And as they went up, there were big storms going on. They call them hypercanes that were going on during this time. And so people would live in caves, so that what better place you could ride out a storm in a cave. And so these are the first people going out. These were not cavemen. They were not, as we think of, grunting around Neanderthals. These are the hunters and gatherers that first would go into a place, the first explorers that were going to a place, and they would live like this and follow the migration of herds. But they were not these near animal people. They were intelligent people. You know, in these first people, they have found a cosmetic, almost like a shell that opens like this and have different colors, like cosmetics in there from these people that live in these caves. And they have very specific burial things. These were not grunting around near animal people. These were human beings, intelligent human beings. And they carried a lot of the technology that we're going to discover from the Tower of Babel and from this Babylon, this civilization. They carried a lot of that information with them to the places they went. And there's evidence of that all over the world, of the information and the stuff that they carried with them. So, I know, I was all over the place, wasn't I? I wasn't very spiritual today, huh? So, I think it's important infrastructure to get as we try to understand the rest of the Bible and understand the timing of events. So next week, we will get into the Tower of Babel, and we'll discover what happened there. And we'll talk, and as I can't help it, we'll talk about some of their technology and some of the things that they could accomplish, some of the things they did accomplish, and some of that knowledge that went with those people, the knowledge they took with them around the world. A lot of these things we see from ancient man, a lot of things that they could do, centered around and started around this civilization there around the Tower of Babel. Babylon.